Good morning, everyone. So today we'll continue our journey on the road to character. Our journey in our avodas Hashem. So far we've talked about two midos. We've addressed two core qualities of our character, of our personality, and we've thought about two individuals. We addressed humility in the personality of Moshe Rabbeinu, and we have addressed wholesomeness in the personality of Roei Klein. So this morning, I would like to address another midah, another character trait, which I struggled a little bit to define precisely, although I think it's certainly a core principle of a person's character development from a Torah viewpoint in imitating Hashem and developing Bein Adam La'atzmo. And I'm not sure of a precise Hebrew term for this character trait, but we can call it selflessness. So this character trait, selflessness, is crucial to a person's development as an Oved Hashem, especially in today's day and age. A couple of years ago, a book was published. I put a little graphic of it on the front. Again, I apologize that the machine was malfunctioning. Not everybody has packets. We'll have to share. It was titled The Narcissism Epidemic. Time magazine had a cover once. The me. I think it was called the me generation. And what he calls the epidemic of narcissism in our society. And narcissism is an unhealthy obsession with a person's self, with oneself. It's based initially on a Greek mythology figure, and it's the idea that a person is so self-absorbed, self-focused, and it takes over a person's world. And everything that a person sees is always in the frame of oneself. As opposed to the opposite, the antonym, I think, of narcissism, at least this is what I was thinking, although I had a difficult time when I looked on the dictionary in the thesaurus for an antonym for narcissism. I didn't come up with what I was really looking for. I think really the antonym of narcissism is selflessness. And when I say that, I mean an orientation toward others. You know, if narcissism is about everything being framed in terms of myself, how I view the world, how I make decisions, how everything is colored is all about me. It's all about me. Selflessness is that it's all about others. It's all about everybody else. So that's how I would... So... In a certain sense, it's different than chesed in that, number one, which is part of the reason that I was struggling to, I wanted to come up with a very precise definition of the midah that we're talking about. I discussed it with some of the kollel rabbis because I wanted to hone it. So Sy's pointing out that there are similar midos, but they're not exactly the same. In the sense that chesed, I would say, number one, the definition of chesed is expansiveness. Or expansive energy, an outward movement, a sense of generosity. Now, there is definitely a lot of overlap and a lot of connection between the midah of magnanimity and the concept of selflessness. But they're slightly different in the sense that a person could be a Baal Chesed, but they could still have self-interest. They could still see the world through themselves. Now, they may be able to still do chesed, but this is, at least to me, and maybe I'm misrepresenting it, but I think it's a different quality. It has to do more with a person's orientation. And a person who is selfless is undeniably going to be a person of chesed. That's going to be a corollary to a person who is selfless. But you can have a Baal Chesed, you can have somebody who does acts of kindness, or even who is oriented toward Chesed, but they're not necessarily selfless. In a certain sense, we could shape the definition also, and we'll see in a moment, in terms of the concept of, I think it's a Hebrew term they use today, Mesirut. Like you'd call it in halachic parlance, Mesiras Nefesh. But not Mesiras Nefesh in the sense of martyrdom, but in the sense of being masur to something. Masur means devoted to it, in the service of it. So selflessness, this idea of Mesirus, of being oriented to others, outwardly focused, is, I think it's a little bit different. It's a little nuance there. It's different than the Midah of Chesed. Yes?
Wouldn't humility be the opposite of narcissism? One is blowing yourself up and the other is...
Very good. So here too, one could distinguish. The question was whether or not humility is the antonym of narcissism. So there is certainly an element there. But if humility is, as we define, humility is an accurate representation of yourself, that God gives you everything that you have. It's not denying who you are and the gifts that you have, but it's understanding your place. Then a person could still be narcissistic, even if they're humble. You could say, look, all my gifts come from God, but everything in the world revolves around me and how I view things. Everything is defined internally by myself.
Altruism. Yeah.
So altruism is, I would say, one of the closest ways of defining this midah, as we'll see in a little bit. So I think altruism, which is the sense of giving for the sake of giving, which is the apex of the midah of chesed, stems from a sense of selflessness. Right, I think the selflessness is the core, and the expression of that is going to be through altruism, which we'll talk about in a little bit, if that makes sense, and we'll sharpen it a little bit. Yeah.
The person you said, I think, 2 weeks ago about I think his name Klein. That
yes, Roy Klein. Hashem Yikom Damo.
Isn't that a selflessness?
So that was certainly an act of selflessness to be Moser Nefesh, Masur, Mesiras Nefesh. And we could talk about different personalities who personified selflessness in different ways in their life. So here too, many of these character traits could be personified in many different figures that we could think of. So I chose one particular person this morning, one personality who I thought really exemplifies in the fullest sense, in a certain way, the concept of selflessness. And his name is Rav Klonimus Kalman Shapira, Hashem Yikom Damo, the great Rebbe of Piasetzno. So the Piasetzno Rebbe is born in 1889, and for some of you who have the packets, so he was born in 1889 it's a quick biography. This is put together by Nechemia Polin, who's the author of this work, which we'll come back to in a little bit. The Piasetzno was a great spiritual giant born into a Hasidic dynasty. His father was Rebbe Lemelech of Grozitsk, although he died when he was 3 years old. He was raised as an orphan by his mother, and then he was married about the age of 15 to the daughter of the Hapstein family, Rebbe Moshe Hapstein, who was the Koznetzer Rebbe, who was a descendant of Yisrael Hapstein, the Koznetzer Magid, Zchus Yogan Aleinu. So at the age of 20, became the Rebbe, the Hasidic master of a small town not far from Warsaw called Piasetzno. And from there, he built a yeshiva Das Moshe in 1929. I think it was he published the... 32. He published the Chovas HaTalmidim, which is a very fundamental work on education of students. You can see the biography a little bit more. He was a tremendous Hasidic personality. Incredible Hasidic personality. And he was a great tzaddik. We just observed his yahrzeit on the fourth day of Cheshvan. But he was a special kind of a tzaddik. He was an unusual kind of a tzaddik.
He was a Ishkodesh.
Yes.
The one with the tin cans?
Yes, we're going to come to the tin cans in a little bit. So, the way we're going to structure this is it's going to be biography spliced through the shiur, just so no one falls asleep. I'm not going to give you the whole biography right now. I want to begin with a piece of Torah on page 1, and if you don't have the sheets, it's okay. This is a tremendous Torah, which it doesn't just appear here, it appears elsewhere in his writings. This is a piece of Torah, Torah from Shlomo HaKohen of Radomsk. The holy Radomsk of the Teferet Shlomo, great Hasidic master of the 19th century, Rav Shlomo Rabinowitz. Shlomo HaKohen Rabinowitz. So he's discussing this parsha is the parsha of Parshas Pinchas, where he's talking about the piety of Pinchas, and he has a very fundamental comment. I'll share with you. He says the following. On the sixth line, for those who have it, if not, I'll just read it out. I'm going to assume that no one has it, so just you'll follow with me. Ki yesh bin beis mine tzadikim. There are two kinds of a tzaddik. A tzaddik is that righteous person who guides us, who inspires us, and who brings spiritual energy through his personality, through his neshama into the world. Ha'echad hu ha'miyachel u'mitzape al gedulas habori baruchu yehi chavod Hashem le'olam v'bias Mashiach meher v'yameinu. There is one tzaddik who's so high and so lofty, his focus is the divine presence, is focusing on the great spiritual achievements. And he says, those are the tzaddikim, for example, of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu, they were burnt not because they were wicked, Adrabah, it's because they were so holy, they were pursuing spirituality with so much intensity that it was beyond what was capable of at that time, so they were not from this world. He has an acronym here for Anna. Eliyahu Nadav and Avihu. Eliyahu Anavi is so intense. The spiritual intensity of Eliyahu Anavi was so intense that the Jewish people couldn't stand it. And he couldn't stand them, truth to tell. He had to run away to the desert to hide behind a rock to see the vision of God. And then God said to him, guess what? At a certain point, it's just not for you. You're not at that level. You're just at a higher level. Just in a different place. But then there's another kind of a tzaddik. He says, "Ulam yesh bechina atcheres b'tzadik yisod olam." There's another kind of tzaddik in the underlines, if you have it. Leos doresh tov la'amo, that he is, and he's paraphrasing a phrase from Megillas Esther, doresh tov la'amo Mordechai. He is doresh; he seeks good for the people. Asher bezeh bachar Hashem. With this, God chose. Ki cheftzo ritzono yizbarach shemo, it is Hashem's will, lios tzadik kazeh, that there should be a righteous person, a tzadik like this, lahashpia tov lebnei Yisrael, to bring goodness, not for the sake of God, but for the sake of us, for the Jewish people. Kasher hoya tekef kavana sabriya kamo shekosav tzur kol ha'olamim, tzadik b'chol hadoros, dor v'dorshav. Shemanig ha sovel hador umarachim aleim umaulahamtik hadina mehem. His job is to be there for the people. And he goes on to explain this. And in another place, he refers to this concept in the context of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, he is the highest spiritual achiever of all time. And yet, when Hashem said, "Is it going to be you or is it going to be them?" he said, let it be them. The full Mesiras Nefesh, he literally says, Mecheni na Mesifracha. What kind of a tzaddik is that? Hashem says, I want to bring godliness into the world and you're going to be the man. And what does he say? No. No thanks. No thanks to the Rebbe Shlomo. Was he out of his mind? It doesn't matter. Because he's going to be Moser Nefesh for them. Meaning for us. It's a different kind of a tzaddik. Two kinds of tzaddikim. Says the Radomsker, the Rebbe Shlomo really needs the second kind of tzaddikim. Because we're all human, and we all have frailties. And we need someone to help us, to engage us and inspire us. For this reason we have such tzaddikim. These tzaddikim are the Mesiras Nefesh tzaddikim, the selfless tzaddikim. So comes 1939, and the Rebbe finds himself in Warsaw. Now, I wasn't able to get the original, but Amir Tzashem, I'm going to get the original from this B'siyata D'Shmaya. It's going to take me a little bit of time till I get to the right library. But so instead, I gave it to you on page 2, just a Xerox copy from a magazine called The Forward. Some of you know it as Der Vorwärts, the Yiddish newspaper in 1940. There was a man by the name of Lazar Kahan who whose account was published in March 30th, 1940, he describes that when the war broke out, I'm quoting for you, the Pia Setzner Rebbe was located, this is the translation from the Yiddish, the war was located in, the Rebbe was located in Warsaw. Those close to him insisted that he leave Warsaw for a safer location. The Rebbe, however, did not allow himself to be persuaded, replying as follows, I'm not going to desert my chassidim at this difficult time. Wherever my chassidim are, that's where I must be. I will not consent to saving myself while leaving my chassidim abandoned. That's the Rebbe of selflessness. That's the Rebbe of Mesirus. So he stays there. Zielna 5 was the house where he lived. And within the first few weeks, you know, the whole German Blitzkrieg campaign of Poland took only 6 weeks before the whole place was overrun. And the bombardment of Warsaw was intense and fierce. So I forget whether it was right after, I think it was right after Yom Kippur, that a piece of shrapnel from a bomb, from an explosion outside the house, entered the house and struck the Rebbe's son. And he was wounded very badly, was taken to a hospital. While he was at the hospital, so the Rebbe's daughter-in-law and several other members of their close family were there at the hospital waiting. First, they had to find a hospital because the hospitals were all full. And then he went to seek, I think, a different doctor, medical attention. And when he was gone, a bomb fell at the entrance to the hospital. So it killed the family that had been there waiting. And then, I think it was the second day of Sukkot, I can tell you, because he has a drasha in his memory. I think it was the second day of Sukkot that his son died. I'll tell you. In the, it would be in the second year, because it would be in 1940. Here it is. You have to when it was. And I'll explain this document in a second. The first yard site of Bini Harav HaChasid V'HaKadosh Secher Tzadik Levracha Yom Beis de Sukkot. Second day of Sukkot. So what are these? These are the collection of sermons, of drushas, that the Holy Pius Setzner delivered from the outbreak of the hostilities. The first drusha is Rosh Hashanah, Tavshin Ches, which means Rosh Hashanah, the fall of 1939. The war broke out on September 1st. And then the last drusha, the last entry, is Shabbos Chazon. So that's probably July of 1942. We have a letter, an introductory letter that's dated 1943, January 1943. The letter looks like this. Here's the handwriting. The letter says, essentially on the top, if anybody finds these manuscripts, which included Chidushei Torah, what he called the Chidushei Torah, his sermons, from these years, fall of 1939 until now, this letter is dated January 1943, they should, and in addition to that, there was another manuscript called Hachsharas Avreichim, as well as something called Tzav Aziris, his personal diary, I think B'nai Machshava Tova was also in there, a parcel. He should please send them back if there are any rabbis left in Warsaw. If there's nobody left in Warsaw, should please send them to my brother. He had a brother who was a religious Zionist chassid, who was known as the Admor HaChalutz. And there were some of those, let's say my family. My father's family came from a Hasidic Galitzianische family that was involved in a religious Zionist movement. So his brother was living in Tel Aviv, Rav Yeshaya Shapira. So In the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, the Rebbe was transferred to a work camp called Tronicki, which we'll come back to in a little bit. But before he left, he buried this collection of manuscripts in a milk can and a metal carton underneath the ghetto. Now, it was not found with Ringelblum's Onik Shabbos archives, but it sounds like they knew each other. There was some involvement. They were aware that they were both burying manuscripts because they weren't the only ones. There were several others. This is another example of a diary. This is an English translation. Rabbi Shimon Huberband also murdered. But after he was able to bury his diary from the ghetto, this is an English translation called Kiddush Hashem, Jewish Religious and Cultural Life in Poland During the Holocaust. Hashem Yikom Damo. So there were others who were chronicling life in the ghetto, and many of the manuscripts survived. Some of them did not, but many of them did. So the Polish factory worker who unearthed this eventually made its way to Rabbi Yishaiah Shapiro, and it was published under the title of Eish Kodesh. So here you have an individual who, by this point in the war, just right off the bat, is completely broken and shattered. He has lost almost his entire family. The rest of his family is going to be wiped out in a short time. And he's mamish completely broken. This was his only son. This was the future. And it's gone before his eyes. Just right there at the beginning of the war. And yet, he finds this unbelievable koach, this power, to be able to live beyond himself. To live an unceasing, selfless existence on behalf of others. And this is detailed it's not just evidenced by the fact that he was giving messages and he was speaking to the congregants, to the chassidim who came to listen to him. And by the way, there are some pauses here where you wonder if the pauses are because of his own difficulties or because of the things that were going on that he couldn't speak. And yet he still spoke. He still gave chizuk to other people when he himself was completely shattered. And he was very active. So for example, in this diary, Rav Uberband, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, which we don't have time to talk about him in and of itself, forget who did the translation of this, I think it was originally Hebrew. So he has a whole chapter here. One of the things he talks about, he mentions, is the ghetto life. One chapter has to do with mikvos. And he mentions how the Rebbe was very active, involved in helping organize mikvos. There was another book that mentions him. I'm trying to remember in what context. There are several different diaries of people who in the Warsaw Ghetto who mention the activities of the PSS and Rebbe, among others. I don't mean to say that this was to the exclusion of others. There were other Hasidic rabbis and other rabbanim and other activists who were out there, but the notion of someone who's totally broken, has lost everything, but they're living for others. They're so selfless in that they didn't just curl up and try to figure out how to live by himself. He figured out what was important for others. And that has such an incredible power. It's so much that there's so much wrapped up in that. And I think it could be so inspirational for us. And it comes, I think, from the Shoresh, where all our neshamas come from, the Avos. It's an unbelievable, I don't know if we think about it this way, but if you look, there's a Gemara Baba Kama on page 3. The Gemara in Baba Kama teaches us the following. The rabbis learned, Kol hamavakesh rachmim al chavero, v'hu tzarech la'oso davar, hu nana tchila. A person who davens for somebody else, and he needs the same thing, or she needs the same thing, they are answered before someone else. So the Gemara asks why. So the Gemara has two psukim. One, it quotes a pasuk from Iov, Vashem shavas shvus Iov behispallo ba'ad re'ehu. And then it quotes another pasuk, Vayispal ala Avram elo elokim, Vayirpa elokim es avimelech vesishto v'am hosav. Uksiv Hashem pakar es sara. Avram didn't have children, but he davened for Avimelech, who needed to be healed. What's the pshat in this Gemara? So I'll tell you what I think the pshat in this Gemara is. I probably heard it somewhere, so it's probably not mine, but if it's not good, it's probably mine. I think the pshat in the Gemara is like this. The Rambam says in Hilchos Deos that a person can't be an Oved Hashem if they're sick, Rachmana Litzlan. So why can't a person be an Oved Hashem when they're sick? God forbid, he should save us. So the Rebbe has in one of his drushas an idea where he says, look, our whole Yiddishkeit is smashed because we're being murdered, we're being beaten, we're being broken. So how can we? And I think he's alluding to, and he develops this, but maybe I understand the following way. Rachman Litzlan, when a person is ill, so the nature of such a state, and we should never know from such things, is that a person could become very self-absorbed. We see this sometimes when we encounter people who are not well, that their whole orientation, their whole life, everything revolves around their illness. And you know what? It's betzedek. Of course it's betzedek. That's justified. That's their whole existence. So, of course the person's going to be self-absorbed. So when you wrote, the Gemara says, unbelievable. When a person is ill, Rachmana Litzlan, and yet they have the spiritual fortitude to daven for somebody else who needs that, that has the ability to break down all the barriers with heaven. That person is going to be answered right away because that prayer has so much energy because of the selflessness. A person, Rachmana Litzlan, who's not well, they are justified in only focusing on themselves. Of course, they don't have the mental capacity, the space, the emotional space to think about somebody else. Yet the Gemara is saying, you know what? If you can meet a person who is able to think about somebody else's sorrows, despite the fact that they have their own sorrows, those are going to be answered. Vashem pakad esav. And you see the similar thing, not exactly the same, but it's very similar on the next page in the Bereishis Rabbah at the beginning of Toldos, where it says that Yitzchak Avinu davens, Vayetar Yitzchak Lashem lenochach ishto. He davens opposite his wife. Malamed shahaya Yitzchak shatuach kan vehishtucha kan. He was davening over there. She was davening over there separately. Va'omer, he says, Ribono shel olam, kol banim sha'ata nosin li, yu menat tzedekes hazo. You're going to give me children? I'm confident, so to speak, Yitzchak saying, you're going to give me children? You know what? She should be their mother. Let her have the privilege, the joy to be their mother. And what does she say? Af hi yomar kein, kol banim sha'at osed li tein li, yumanat tzadik hazeh. They should be his children. Because sometimes, Rachman Litzlan, if a couple doesn't get married, so she marries someone else, he marries someone else. So the natural response would have been, everybody should daven for themselves. Yitzchak doesn't have children, he's supposed to be the father of this nation, so he should daven for himself that he should have children. What's his focus? He says, I'm not so worried about me. You know what I'm worried about? I'm worried about her. And she has the same response. I'm not so worried about me. Imagine Machem will figure it out, but what about him? That's the midah of mesiris, of selflessness. That's this unbelievable koach, that even when a person is afflicted with their own sorrows, they're worrying about somebody else. They're thinking about someone else's need, even though they have the same circumstance. Unbelievable. Tzipela. So now I understand very well a famous Shlomo Carlbach story. This is a famous, famous story that recently we had a Shabbaton in Lincolnwood. So I repeated the story again because it was the Shabbos that we had in Lincolnwood was Dalet Cheshvan, the yard site of the Pia Setzner. So I had the Tish Friday night, so I repeated the story, even though I had said it in Lincolnwood before. It doesn't matter. You have to say it again. Now, the truth is that this story alone takes 20 minutes. So I'm not going to say the story. I won't do that because certain things you can't do. It appears in different places. You can find it online. You could probably listen to it on YouTube. The story is known as the Holy Hunchback. The Holy Hunchback, I'm not going to tell you the story because that would be wrong. You have to hear it in its full experience of the Holy Hunchback. You have to listen to it. It's Kedai. Maybe I'll afterwards try to find it on YouTube. I can forward it to you because I won't tell it to you. It's wrong to do that. Just to say it, Bekitzer. Shlomo Carlbach tells the story. Okay. I can't tell you what it is because it would be wrong. So there's one line in the story. I'll forward it to you. Don't worry. But if I told it to you right now in 5 minutes, it would be a crime against the story. You can't do that. So the Pia Setzner plays a big role in the story, and they quote something, one Torah from the Pia Setzner that animates the whole story. That the Pia Setzner used to get the students together all the time, and he would tell them something. He would tell them one thing. He would get them together Friday night, he would get them together Tishon and during the week, all the time. Because remember, the Pia Setzner had a yeshiva called Das Moshe. It was called Das Moshe because his father-in-law was Rav Moshe of Koshnitz. So he would tell the students in Yiddish, the greatest zach in the Welt is ton a mensch a toiva. The greatest thing in the world is to do somebody a favor. That's the greatest thing in the world. The greatest thing in the world is to do somebody a favor. That's mamash the greatest thing. Who could say such a thing? A person who is so suffused with selflessness could define the greatest thing in the world is to do something for somebody else. It was so unsurprising to me that that is what was passed down from the holy Pia Setzner, that the greatest thing in the world is to do something for somebody else. And this has deep roots in the Jewish tradition. There is an amazing line on the next page in a Hakdama. This appears in the introduction to the Sefer called Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim was the great monumental work, the epic work of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who was the chief disciple of the Vilna Gaon, the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva. So the Volozhin Yeshiva was in the Lithuanian yeshiva that was the model for almost all yeshivas in the world, and the mother yeshiva, so to speak, of the vast majority of yeshivas that we have today. You know, Tells and Lakewood and Neri Yisrael and YU and Merkas Harav and Brisk. All of our yeshivas come from Volozhin, from different rabbeim who ultimately trace their lineage back to Volozhin. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner founded the yeshiva. And when he passed away, his son, Reb Itzel of Volozhiner, Reb Yitzchak, took over the yeshiva and published this work of Rav Chaim Volozhin called Nefesh HaChaim, which is four chapters, very important work of the work of the Nefesh HaChaim. In the introduction to the work of the Nefesh HaChaim, it's published by his son, so his son writes a little bit about his saintly father, Rav Chaim Volozhiner. So what does he write? Listen to what he says. So, in this paragraph, in the Bechol Derachav, this is a little bit of an old edition, so maybe it's not the most beautiful print. You can get newer ones, but I always prefer the more Makori editions. So, this is an old edition. So, he writes like this. He says, In all of his life, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, his father, used to diminish his own kavod. He wasn't interested in his own kavod. Laharbos kavod shamayim. Whether it was public matters, communal matters, whatever it was, it's not about him. And now in the parentheses he writes, Reb Itzel of Volozhiner writes, and where I put the arrow, V'haya rogel lehochiach usi, he used to rebuke me, my dad, al shira she'ineni mishtatif b'tzaira da'achrina, that I am not adequately empathetic to the travails of others. I don't feel it enough, that I'm not mishtatif in somebody else's sar. V'kol dibro elai, Tomid. This is what he always used to say to me. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the great Rosh Yeshiva, the founder of the Yeshiva. What did he say? Shezeh kol ha'adam. This is all of man. What? Lo le'atzmo nivra. He was not created for himself. Rather, lohoel la'achrinei, to help others, kechol asher yimtza bekocho lasos, whatever capacity you have to do. That is kol ha'adam. That is everything. It's all about selflessness. It's all about what can you do to help somebody else. So now comes the obvious question. Wait a second, that doesn't make sense. We know the Gemara Bava Metzia tells us that when you have two people walking in the desert and one of them is holding a flask of water, so Ben Petura says, split the flask, both of you drink, and then they'll both die. And Rabbi Akiva says, no. What does Rabbi Akiva say? Chayecha kodmim, you drink. Chayecha kodmim l'chayecha vercha. So what do you mean? Ze kol ha'adam. This is the entirety of man to do for everybody else. Be selfless. What do you mean? Rabbi Akiva says, worry about yourself. So it's not true. I don't remember when we did this. A couple of years ago, we learned some introductions to some Sfarim. That was one of our forays into Jewish learning. So we met a man by the name of Rav Shimon Yehuda HaKohen Shkop. Rav Shimon Shkop, who was the author of the Sha'arei Yosher, as well as a great Rosh Yeshiva in a Polish town called Grodno, actually spent a year in New York fundraising for the European yeshiva communities and gave shiurim at YU, at that time, I forget, I think it was 1931 or 1929, they actually tried to convince him to stay at YU, and I think it was Rav Chaim Ozer or the Chavetz Chaim sent telegrams to tell him, we need you back in Europe, which he did. That's way before the Nazis came. But Rav Shimon was a great gaon, and he wrote this unbelievable sefer called Shari Yosher. And it's very, very complicated Talmudic halachic analysis. And the introduction, he has a beautiful, like a philosophical manifesto. It's amazing. He asked the question, he says, how can you be Kadosh LaHashem? I'm truncating it very briefly because the last time, I think we did this once, we spent 45 minutes just on this one introduction. A regal achas, he says, the pasuk says, Kadoshim ti, you should be Kadosh, ki Kadosh ani. So maybe you're going to be as sanctified as God? No, Kedushas l'malam Kedushaschem. So Reb Shimon asked the question, what was the Havamina? What was the initial thought of this medrash that we should be as holy as God? That's crazy. So he defined holiness in a very specific way. Reb Shimon says that holiness is, and this is what Mrs. Pollan was alluding to before, is doing for the klal. It's altruism. Meaning God is the ultimate altruist. Im titzdak matitin lo, what are you going to give him? He doesn't need anything. He doesn't benefit in any way from what we give him. We benefit, he doesn't. So the Havamina, the thought was, maybe we could be perfectly altruistic. And the answer is, no, we can't be perfectly altruistic. But as a matter of principle, that is holiness. So now, says Reb Shimon, what does it mean that we are supposed to love ourselves? It sounds like you have to love yourself first. And so to speak, what we asked, Rabbi Akiva says, Chayecha Kodmin. So he says, on page 6, he says, I'll tell you the answer. You know how you're going to go about becoming selfless? On line 31, V'sgula zuhi sheyisbarer v'yisames eitzel ha'adam echuso shel ha'ani shelo. So the question is, how do you define I? Rabbi Akiva says, your life comes first. So who are you? Who am I when I say the word I? Ki bezeh yumdad mailas kol ha'odom lafi madregaso. That's how you measure a person, how they self-identify. Ha'ish hagas v'hashafel. A person who is crude and diminished. Kol ha'ani shalo mitzumtzum rak b'chomro v'gufo. It's just in his physical self. That's ani. He's worried about his own skin. L'mayla mimenu, who's more noble than that person? Mishamar gisha ani shalo hu murkav migufa nefesh. He recognized that he has a spirit. L'mayla mizeh, mishamach nisla ani shalo b'nei beis u'mishpachto. A person who defines themselves as others, including his family. You know, the famous story of Rabbi Levin, who went to the doctor with his wife. My wife's foot is hurting us. My wife's foot is hurting us. That's ani. Rabbi Levin he defined ani as his wife, not just his wife, his children, and all the political prisoners in all the Palestine jails. That was ani. So he was on a high level. Vayish holich al pidarkei Torah ani shelo kol am Yisrael. Ani includes everyone, all Jews. And he says, Be'emes, yesh b'zeh ma'il shel isha sholem, that all of humanity, all of existence is part of ani. So therefore, it's not like, well, I have a big problem with selflessness because there's me and there's them, and so I have to give up on the me to serve them. The answer is no. Them is me. So there's a fluidity, there's no barrier. So the selflessness is just the same way I would take care of myself. I take care of them. The same way I do everything for myself, I do everything for them. And we see this. We see that people are mamish moser nefesh for their families. Ani is their family. So many people in this room, you know, they work many years to give their children Jewish education or clothing or shelter. What they had and better than that they had. Were better than their parents gave them. Because they define ani. That person is that, of course, be moser nefesh for them. But the unbelievable thing, the highest level, the tzaddik, is moser nefesh for all of Klal Yisrael. And this is perhaps what the ani is intended in the famous statement on page 7 of Hillel. Hu haya omer, Hillel used to say, im ein ani li, mi li. If I'm not for ani, if I don't have an ani, so who's for me? Ani la'atzmi, but if I am, if my ani, according to the way Reb Shimon defines this, now we can reread the Mishnah differently. If my ani is just defined as atzmi, if the ani is just my own skin, mo'ani, I'm nothing. This is Irving Bunim's commentary on the bottom. On the other hand, if you do become concerned with yourself, what are you? Can you really be effective? Can you solve your own problems? Can you overcome your anxieties? Can you do all you are supposed to do? Furthermore, there is a danger, the danger of becoming all wrapped up in ourselves to the point where we become concerned only with our own salvation and we cease to worry about the welfare of others. In the middle of 1942, there were 400,000 Jews in the ghetto. And after the great deportations, there were 100,000 Jews left. And then, around the period of the liquidation of the ghetto, of the uprising, many of the Jews were transferred to a labor camp called Tronicki, not far away from Warsaw. And that's where the Piasetzner, the Holy Reb Kolonimus Kalman, went. He ended up in Tronicki in May of 1943. There were over 10,000 inmates, and they were mostly working in workshops as tailors, furriers, and broom makers. It's interesting to note, and Nehemiah Poland mentions this in the back, in the epilogue of this book, which is called The Holy Fire, this book is not a translation of the Rebbe's teachings of Torahs during the ghetto years. It's an analysis of the theology, of the thought of Rav Kolonimus Kalman. It's a very powerful, very unique analysis. So he points out also that actually Emanuel Ringelblum was for a time in Tronicki, and actually wrote an account of what was going on there, but that section of his archives did not survive. So we would have known, we don't know, but we would have known a lot of what was the Rebbe was going on, what the activities were. However, there was a guy, his name is Simcha Rotim, who was born Simcha Ratziger, who survived the war, and afterwards described what was going on there in the camp where the Rebbe was. In addition, there was a book published on the Warsaw Ghetto in 1947. There was a fellow, his name is Melech Neustadt, who describes the following unbelievable scenario. The same thing, Rotem described the same thing. At that time in Tronicki, Ringelblum was doing his archival work, and then he was smuggled out. Ringelblum then returned to Warsaw. At that point, that's when he was captured, tortured, and murdered. But he actually survived the liquidation of the ghetto. Emanuel Ringelblum, who was the chief archivist of the Onik Shabbos archives, for those who are familiar, he was smuggled out. And there were others who were offered to be smuggled out of the Tronicki work camp, including the Piasetzner. He had a way to get out. He didn't just have a way to get out in 1939. He had a way to get out in 1943. In June or July, this is Nehemiah Poland, who interviewed Rotem in 1986 in Yerushalayim. We reached the camp where the Piasetzner Rebbe was. We found out, listen to this, that a group had formed of about 20 people, artists, well-known physicians, communal figures, leaders of various parties, and among them, the Rebbe. Simcha Rotem writes that they didn't know that the Piasetzner was in this camp in Tronicki until they found out about this story. We were told that they were mutually committed to a tkias kaf. What's a tkias kaf? A handshake, a binding agreement that no one would leave the camp without the others. This caused us great anguish. You can imagine what it was involved to send someone to the camp and to prepare hiding places. We could have taken out 2 or 3 people at a time, but not 20. So in the fall of 1943, on November 3rd, the Waffen-SS units surrounded the Tronicki labor camp, took the workers out, and they were all shot. Those who tried to escape were called caught and shot. Talal Cheshvan, 1943. It's unbelievable. It doesn't say they had a pact between, you know, the Rebbe and his Hasidim. It doesn't say it had a pact of the Rebbe and other Rebbes. It was artists, physicians, communal leaders. But it was the selflessness. It was not about his own self. And it's such an unbelievable statement because the halacha says, Rabbi Akiva says, Chayecha Kodmin. Your life has to come first. You have to save your life. It has to come first. But the Rebbe must have understood that this was a different circumstance. And that the way he defined himself in this selfless, boundless personality was with this whole group. And therefore he was Moser Nefesh. Not just Moser Nefesh to be selfless for them, he was literally Moser Nefesh. That the Germans, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, snuffed out his light, his fire. This is, Im Ein Ani Li Mili, Uchshani La'atzmi Mo'ani. If you look on the last page, on page 8, there's a beautiful drasha on this topic from Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwich, Zichron Levracha, the founding Rosh Hashiva of Keren B'Yavne, where he quotes this Mishnah. Then he quotes a teaching of the Sfas Emes, the Hilik Ger Rebbe, who quotes his grandfather who raised him. The Sfas Emes was a Yasson, was an orphan. He was raised by his grandfather, the founder of Ger Chassidus, known as the Chidush HaRim. And the Chidush HaRim said, what does it mean? Im Ein Ani Li Mili. Ki Kol Adam Nivra Al Davar Miyuchad. Every person is created. This is from the Sfas Emes in Parshas Korach and Tavresh Mem Zayin. Every person is created for a specific task. She'ein Acher Yachol Asakno. Nobody else can do. And every time and every place. Im Kol Zeh. K'shani La'atzmi Mo'ani She'tzarech Kol Echad Levat El Chelek Prati Shalo El Haklal. He has to literally nullify, levatel, to make it null, his specific role to the role of the community. Everybody has a place, and that's what the Sfas Emes is alluding to, and that's what the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal develops. Al ti boz lecha l'adam, she'ein lecha adam, she'ein lo sha. Everybody has a place. No one else had the qualities of Rav Klonimus Kalman, ben Rabbi Elimelech, Shem Yikom Domo Zuchus Yogan Aleinu. No one else had that. But at the same time, he recognized that if he would have taken those qualities and kept them for himself, it would have been only the first kind of tzaddik that the Radomsko was talking about. He took those qualities and he gave everything that he had. Literally, his whole life. People were coming and going. He devoted his entire life to the klal. Because he recognized if he keeps it for himself, so what has he accomplished? And ultimately that was his life. Of the many, many legacies we could talk about the Holy Pius Hetzner, I think this is one that is an important takeaway, and that is this orientation, the midah of selflessness. Now thank God we're not faced with such kind of horrific circumstance where a person literally has to be Moser Nefesh for others. The choice to stay in the ghetto in Warsaw at the beginning, in 1939, before there was even a ghetto, to stay in Warsaw, and this choice to stay in the work camp in 1943, those are unbelievable selflessness. But even just for ourselves, the idea of thinking about others, the power of thinking about others, like the Gemara says about the Avos, about Avraham and Yitzchak and Rivka, about the notion that even though sometimes we are wrapped up in our own selves, the ability to think about others, that is that midah of Mesiris, the ability to be Moser Nefesh, to have that selflessness, that's part of the road to character. That's really an unbelievably high level in Avodas Hashem that we should all think about.
To some degree, the other 19 people also had to be on that level of selflessness.
Unbelievable. 100%. And many other Rebbes, I have a whole book. Someone gave me a gift. You know, some people give you different kinds of gifts. Someone gave me a gift Rabbi Ephraim Rimmel, he gave me a gift when he came back from Israel, a book collecting biographies of Hasidic rebbes who were murdered in the Holocaust. It's a real pick-me-up. Such a, it was an unbelievable gift. And what you will find there is that there were many, many rebbes. Now, again, there are different perspectives on this, and some rebbes escaped. That was one derech. But then there was another derech. There were many rebbes who was not, B.S. Etzer was not the only one who turned down visas and opportunities to leave. There were others. There were others. Rabbi Nachum Zemba, Hashem Yikom Domo, also in the Warsaw Ghetto, also had an opportunity to leave. He actually was murdered, Rabbi Nachum Zemba, during the uprising. He was murdered on, the uprising started Erev Pesach, so he was murdered on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach in 1943. He had a chance to leave. He didn't leave. There were others. That's, you know, like you said, the, that's also high level, the artists and the...
Unsung heroes. Yeah.
That's right.
If this is related to David Brooks's book, does he, what example does he give, or does he give, contemporary
So I don't know the answer to that question because I never finished the book because I thought it was just a good frame, but I didn't pay that close attention. But you can look around. I'm sure there are people like that. I mentioned last week we had a shiur. We'll come to it in 1 second. Rebbetzin Henny Machlis Aleh HaShalom. So go online and Google. I could put in the same email where I put the story from Shlomo. She just passed away 2 weeks ago. The level of selflessness of this woman, who was from Brooklyn, Stern College graduate, is Louis Uman Kiyasupar. Akate Kach, that they had, you know, 150 people every Friday night and 100 people every single Shabbos in their Yerushalayim apartment. Small apartment. Small apartment. Three-bedroom apartment. My wife, Nechama, went there sometimes when we were in Israel, respectively. I think we overlapped at some point. I don't know. I didn't know her at that time. But she told me that she used to go sometimes on Thursday to cook for Shabbos. They cooked for 150 people Friday night, 100 people Shabbos day. They had homeless people living in their living room. And when they were nervous about it, they had them living in their car, in their van. So he said, so Rabbi Machlis said of his wife, so selfless. It's a different level. Ultimate mamish, pure selflessness. That there was once... a nebuch, a person, it was not 100%, who came there once, ate with them, and she made, I think, whole wheat pizza. Whole wheat pizza. Unbelievable. And the guys couldn't get over it, said it was mamash, the most delicious pizza I ever ate. So Rabbi Machlis describes that one night, at 1 o'clock in the morning, there was tremendous banging on the door. Now what do you mean there was banging on the door? Their front door was never locked, meaning there was banging on their bedroom door at 1 o'clock in the morning. This guy forgot how to make the whole wheat pizza. So he came to ask. And of course, she got up and she sat with him to show him again how to make the whole wheat pizza. So it's so it could be, but that was her. That is, it's not for everybody. Certainly not for me. But that's a level. There are people out there who mamish are selfless. Now, of course, there are many other cheshbonos that go into that factor, but the notion of selflessness, of being oriented toward others, you just have to open your eyes. You'll see it all over the place. We have it in people in our community, also the same thing, who are oriented toward others, and we need to aspire to that level. Yeah, there was a hand up.